Hi, friends. Welcome to the By Faith podcast. I'm your host, Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about a specific experience in their life, letting us step into their shoes so we can learn better how to love our brothers, sisters, family members, and neighbors. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by The Good Book Company, publisher of A Better Than Anything Christmas by Barbara Rioch. These daily family devotions for Advent give a thorough investigation of why Jesus came and how what he gives us is better than anything else we could wish for. Each day, there's a passage to read together, questions to think about, an explanation, and a prayer. There are also age-appropriate application questions, some for younger children and some for older children, as well as journaling space so that each family member can write or draw their own response to what God has shown them. Pick up a copy of A Better Than Anything Christmas at thegoodbook.com or wherever good books are sold. Support for By Faith is provided by B&H Publishers, publisher of 25 Days of the Christmas Story. Count down the days to Christmas with this adorable new book from Dr. Josh and Christy Straub. You'll learn about 25 different characters in the Christmas story from both the Old and New Testament, from the prophet Isaiah to baby Jesus to the Christmas star and the gift of frankincense. Each day includes an easy-to-read story about a person, place, or object from the Christmas story, a character trait, family discussion questions, and more. Order your copy early and get your hearts ready for Christmas. My guest today on By Faith is Kristen Boslaw. A few years ago, Kristen's husband died unexpectedly, and as you can imagine, her life was dramatically altered. She suddenly became a single mom to three young children. In our conversation today, Kristen shares about the day that she lost her husband and how death altered her life in every way possible. She invites us to step into the shoes of being a single parent, and she shares how God has provided for her, what the unseen challenges of being a single parent are, and how we can help and love the single moms and dads around us. I learned so much from talking with Kristen, and I'm so thankful that she was open in sharing her story with me and now with you. Here, friends, is my conversation with Kristen Boslaw. Kristen, thanks for joining me on By Faith.
Thank you.
I'm glad to have you. And this all started because I was thinking how I want to, you know, get some good topic ideas or people guest ideas and ask people on social media. And you said, hey, I want to come. I'd love to share my story. And I was glad that you did because you have a very unique story and situation that we're going to learn about today. So thanks for reaching out.
You're welcome. I told God that I would share if it ever had an opportunity, and your stuff doesn't usually show up in my timeline. So it did. And I was like, oh, well, eh, not going to happen, but I'll throw it out there. And here we are.
And here we are. Can you introduce yourself and where you are and tell us about your family?
Yeah. My name is Kristen Boslaw. I live in Huron, South Dakota, middle of nowhere. I grew up about 30 miles from here in a town of 10, in one square block.
A town of 10, yes. But your family was how many of the 10? There was one other family?
We lived across the creek from town. We weren't in town. We were across the creek.
Wow. So
it was a farm and we were probably country. But yeah, there were 10 people on this one square block and a cafe and a post office and feed and fertilizer distribution place.
Okay.
So a lot of egg business in the area. And yeah.
How many kids do you have now?
I have three kids. My oldest is 8. His name is Malachi. Ainsley is 5 and she's a kindergartner this year. She goes in a couple of days for the full first time. And I have a 2-year-old named Robbie, and he is your typical third child type A 2-year-old, climbing and jumping and needs a constant watch.
Yes, I'm sure.
And lots of fun.
Do you work?
I am at home with kids right now. I'm not working. After we had some big changes in the last couple of years, and after everything happened, I am actually this fall, I am putting my 2-year-old is going to morning daycare so that I can just take some time to breathe and sort things out, sort my mind out, and take some time to specifically focus on healing after what's happened in our family.
Yeah, well, you're alluding to that. So why don't we just jump in? And would you tell us, you said big changes, really big changes. Can you take us back and tell us what happened?
2 years ago, my oldest was in kindergarten. At the time, he was about a month into kindergarten. It's actually almost exactly 2 years ago. It was October 5th. The kids and I were getting ready to go back to my parents' house. They live 5 hours away. We had an exchange student that was coming back to visit them that weekend. And I had just finished getting the car packed and getting kids some last minute snacks. And we were like 20 minutes from leaving the house. And my husband collapsed and started to seize on the floor. I knew that he had a brain aneurysm. He had had one that bled in 2006 before we had met. And he collapsed on the floor and started seizing. And I knew immediately what had happened. It was very clear to me that even though we didn't expect the aneurysm that was there to bleed based on the location of it and the probability and likelihood that they would bleed, that he had more than likely had a brain bleed. And I remember looking at him on the floor and saying, everything just changed.
Are you saying that you knew in that moment that he had died, or?
This was a big, big deal. And regardless of whether he survived or not, that it was going to be a huge life-changing event for us. Yeah. There was no pain beforehand, no like, oh, my head hurts, like they tell you could happen before. It was just an immediate, he collapsed and was down. So in my surprise and shock and the knowledge that I had, I lost it. Like, no, Tim, this can't be happening. Tim, you have to wake up. Come on, wake up. And I went out and grabbed my phone to call 911. And my three-year-old was mobile. My 11-month-old was in his high chair eating a snack. So fortunately, he was safe and couldn't get to anything. She came running in and, Mom, I was scared. And I said, honey, this is very scary. You are right to be scared. And that's not my typical response. You know, usually this is okay. You're safe. So I unlocked the door and I called 911 and I had my three-year-old girl wait by the door so that she could let people she didn't know into the house and help them come find Daddy. And they came and worked on him and got him stable. I called a friend to come get my two little kids that were at home and to pick up my oldest from school. And we went to the hospital where they did the, you know, initial brain scans. We were in a small town out in the Black Hills. So they take you in and it's critical access. They gave me a choice whether I wanted to go to Denver or to Sioux Falls. And they didn't have any like, oh, Denver's way better or Sioux Falls is way better. Mm-hmm. And because I have a lot of family in Sioux Falls, I chose Sioux Falls. My family was all that direction anyways. And so we had some people from our church take us. And we met my parents halfway because my parents had just gotten in the car and started driving. They met us halfway so that we could get further down the road and it wouldn't take us as long.
So he was in the ambulance gone and you had to follow. Is that what you're saying?
Right. I had a police officer take me to the hospital. He was going to be life flighted to Sioux Falls. And we had some friends from our church drive the kids and I in our car that was actually fortunately already packed. I didn't have to worry about that because I had spent the morning packing for a weekend and I needed to switch a few things out. And as I was doing that and we're driving, I left that house knowing, like trying to figure out how to sell it, how to finish. We had a little bit of remodeling to finish, how to finish doing that before I sold it because we were more than likely not going to be able to stay in Spearfish. So I was leaving, you know, all of a sudden I said, here, take all the toys in the car you want, kids. And I was expecting to move to Sioux Falls that day and not, you know, just have to, okay, yeah. we have to find a place to live and sort everything out. We have a lot of friends, a lot of full-time ministry friends in that area. So it would have, we would have been fine, but it's still just like, oh my, we're going to move to Sioux Falls today because I knew the recovery. My background, my professional background is working in group homes with people that have traumatic brain injuries, people that were a little bit more stable and able to live on their own, but needed extra help. And I knew that this was going to be a long ordeal, that recovery was going to be long and it wasn't guaranteed. That he wasn't going to be guaranteed to be safe with us, that he wasn't going to, you know, he may have normal body function, but his mind may be completely gone. And I had no idea what we were looking at or expecting other than that it was going to be really long and really hard.
I see. So when you got to the hospital and you see him, was he present? Was he able to say anything? Were you able to communicate with him at all?
No, he did not ever regain consciousness. My little boy who was 6 at the time said, I never got to say goodbye. And I said, well, I didn't either. He never woke up. But we can say goodbye in our hearts. And that has been sufficient for him so far, but he did not regain consciousness. He actually had a really severe seizure on the flight. And after that, like, cause on the flight, they weren't monitoring. They got him to Sioux Falls before they were able to hook him up to the brainwave monitors. And they really didn't have anything significant as far as brainwaves when he was in Sioux Falls and his reflexes weren't responding. There was a lot of pressure inside his skull. So they did a procedure where they drill into the skull, into the ventricles where there's fluid, cerebrospinal fluid. And they were hoping to be able to control the pressure inside his skull with a shunt, that they would be able to say, oh, pressure's rising, we can pull a little fluid out and give more room.
I see.
And that procedure failed. The doctor said that he had not ever seen pressure rise so quickly again inside the skull. He thought that he had maybe hit a blood vessel or something like that. And he didn't. They took him straight back. Once the pressure rose, they took him straight back to check and see what was going on inside. And it was just the brain tissue had swollen to as much pressure as the inside of the skull could handle.
Wow.
So we knew, we went from 11 a.m. that morning, close to 11 a.m., things, you know, normal life, normal day, to 11 p.m. This is a fatal injury. He would not have made it even if he had collapsed on the steps of this ER with a shunt in his head all ready to go. His brain was that angry with the amount of blood that was there in his brain. And it just, there was no way to save him. They did a procedure where they cooled his body in hopes that they would be able to get the inflammation down, but it was a pretty low hope procedure. I'm still very glad that we did it, because I can say that we did everything we possibly could, if anyone would ever ask me.
Yes.
And because of that, the brain death testing took a little bit longer because they had to stabilize him and have him at normal body temperature and stable for a certain amount of time before they could do the testing for brain death. So that was 2 days later, Sunday night, they did the brain death testing. So from Friday morning to Sunday night, he was in the hospital on life support.
Wow. And were you able to be with him? Or in that moment, I'm thinking you have these small children. You also have this husband that you love dearly that is on life support. I'm sure your mind was solely there with him, but in the back of your mind, there's this knowledge that you have to parent these children. You have to help them navigate this.
Yeah. And I've heard it a lot in the last few weeks with educators. We're building this plane while we fly it. I didn't know what I was doing either. So definitely there was a lot of that. Fortunately, we had a lot of time. The procedure where they tried to cool his body to bring inflammation down inside his skull gave us time to talk about it. And how do we put this into words that are, I mean, it's serious. You cannot tell your children that their father passed away without causing a lot of pain. But what is the most easy to understand? How do we do this? And we also, one of the wonderful things about South Dakota is that you almost always know someone.
That's great. I love that.
We're a pretty small state. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And we actually knew someone that was a chaplain at the hospital. She had worked with Tim when he was in seminary in Sioux Falls. And they had worked at the same church, actually. So she was able, like, she knew me and she knew Tim and she knew a little bit more about where to start than someone coming into a situation just totally blind to our background would be.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Thank you.
We haven't mentioned it yet, but you had told me prior to this that your husband was in ministry. Was he the pastor of the church?
Yeah, but he was the solo pastor at a small church in Spearfish. They were working actually to repot themselves a little bit after they had some trauma of their own in a split. And he had been, this was our eighth year in full-time ministry. We'd been married for 9 years, mm-hmm. Three little kids.
And how old
was he? He's 36.
He passes away and you realize my life, as you said, in that moment when he collapsed, everything is different. And when you mean mm-hmm. everything, I mean, your husband's job was for a pastor's wife. That's kind mm-hmm. of your world, right? And now that's right. Gone. Yeah. He's gone. You're suddenly a single parent. Did you stay in the home that you lived in together?
We did, actually, for quite a while. It was almost 4 months, and our church family in Spearfish is just phenomenal, and they took such good care of us that it actually took me 4 months to realize that my kids really needed to be closest to their grandparents. And really, that was largely, obviously, it's too much for one person to do. This isn't a situation where I have every other weekend off or anything like this. And I have trauma. I did CPR on my husband and it wasn't successful, not because of anything I did or didn't do, but just even the amount of things that I had to process mentally.
Yes.
And then where are the kids going to be if something would happen to me? You know, we had to redo all the legal work and all the planning that had taken place before. And even looking at, so if this is where the kids would be and how this would happen if something happened to me tomorrow, they need to be in the community and in the place where they would be. They need mm-hmm. to be somewhere where they're comfortable, where they know they're well loved and where they know that they're home. And they would have had to move. So we did end up deciding to move back to my parents, or back to kind of my hometown. We're about 30 miles away and my parents are about 15 minutes away. So we're not too far apart. We've been able to spend a lot of time with them and just have a lot of fun.
Yeah. We can all hear your story and imagine your life has been altered, but can you help us mm-hmm. to understand just how much life has been altered for you?
We have Tim's piano. We have maybe half of the same furniture. And that's about it. That hasn't changed. It's almost to the point that if he would walk through the door and be totally fine, that I don't know if he and I would be compatible anymore. Like, there has been that much change, even in just my heart and in my mind. But you look at when you have a two-parent household, you look at things, everything, you know, our house in Spearfish didn't work because the kids didn't want to not be with a grown-up, and we had a two-level house. So we were always crammed on one small level in one, you know. Uh-huh. So we couldn't ever even spread out in the house because they didn't want to not be able to see me. And we ended up finding a house that was all one level, which wasn't on the list. It wasn't even a thought because that doesn't happen very often out here. But it's just been phenomenal. But every single process that you have, you know, the morning routine, what do you do overnight? One of you sleeps, one of you doesn't, you know, whether you split up the night or, you know, somebody gets to take a nap or, you know, just the little breaks. And even just talking to a grown-up after the kids go to bed, that grounding reminder that, yes, you are a grown-up and there's more to you than just picking up messes that get remade. There, not a single process in our life was not rewritten. Actually, the Sunday morning routine, getting my kids ready for church by myself, was about the only thing that didn't change.
I know what you're talking about.
Any other pastor's wife out there will know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. I was
Let's talk more about the single parenting, because I think that's something that we really want to learn from you. For those of us who are not single parents, we want to walk in your shoes as much as we can. I mean, we can't walk in them perfectly, but we want to understand what that's like. And your single parenting is, it's not just single parenting. It's dealing with grief and loss and trauma and all of that. Mm-hmm. But zeroing in on this new reality for you as a mom, what do you want people to understand about single parenting?
The first thing I have is that it is really hard. there's no splitting grown-ups, a lot of mental strain. Everything that you had previously split between two parents or two grown-ups is now one, or everything that would normally, quote unquote, normally be split between two parents or grown-ups is one. And when that happens, the kids' attention is also split in half, the available attention, available grown-up. Mm. So not only is their attention, the available attention split in half, but the workload is doubled. And the mental load, when you're a single parent or a solo parent, or however, there are a few different, you have to do all the finances, you have to do all the, you know, taking care of the financial end of things and all your home maintenance, your yard maintenance. We have snow here in the winter and grass in the summer. You know, even if there were a lot of things that I was like, I could do this, but I have a 15-month-old and I can't leave him. Like, he was climbing out of his crib before he could.
Oh,
no. It's one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would think also making decisions. I think about when there's a big decision to make about one of my children, I can bounce ideas off of my husband.
Right. There's no sounding board for those decisions. There's no, I have down here that emotional needs, like, of the kids exponentially increase. And they lost their security. The worst thing that had happened that they could imagine happening, you know, one of your parents dying, is it's happened. So what else in my imagination could be real or could be happening? And it's just, there were so many things like that. Yeah, it's really, really hard.
Has it been hard for you to have the time yourself to grieve because you just have to be on for your kids?
I do put them to bed fairly early. I feel like I've had time to grieve. I have not had time to wallow, which, I mean, there are, if I was completely by myself, if it was just me and no kids, I don't know what I would have slipped into, because I don't have anyone else to take care of or think of. I have to keep my house at least to minimum health standards. My youngest, whatever injury he has, no matter how careful or mindful I am, is going to be of the magnitude that we get to talk to somebody outside our house about what happened. He's quite the kid and a lot of fun, but it's just really hard.
I tried to imagine it, but I'm not sure that we can fully even imagine the mental and emotional and physical load Do you think, as you look back over, or like if you put yourself in your shoes before your husband passed away, and you would think about mm-hmm. single parents, or maybe there were single parents in your church, I don't know, but do you think that you had misconceptions about single parents that now you realize that you had? And I'm asking that just to help us to maybe think about our own misconceptions that we might have of single parents.
Definitely. Obviously, there are things that I've realized since becoming a single parent that I was the mom that when my husband had to go to camp, I packed up the kids and went to grandma's house for the week. Like, I didn't think I'd make it a week on my own with just the kids. And here I am at almost 2 years. I did pack up the kids and go to grandma's house, let's be honest.
Yes.
But we are doing this. And I think a lot of the misconceptions I had just came from not, like, there is almost no way to picture it. I had always noticed the single parents in our church were together, and the parents with two parent homes were together. Whether the single parents were widowed or divorced or had never married or whatever the situation was, that there always seemed to be a gap there. And I noticed that and was wondering what the purpose is. Like, why does this happen? What's the cause? What's the reason? And it really is just that our lives are so different that we almost don't understand the other side. I thought that there was always some sort of like bad choice or irresponsibility and I mean, obviously things happen, but that someone didn't think things through, or they didn't realize how hard it was going to be when they left. That is not the case, or that they didn't care as much about their kids. Which is absolutely not the case. I wish I had known how much insecurity that they fought on a daily basis, how much they feel like they're being watched, and how lonely they are.
Hmm. Can you speak more to that? What the insecurity and the loneliness that mm-hmm. you feel?
Right. Yeah. I'm it for my kids. If I am at my parents' house with my kids, they want me, not grandma and grandpa. There's no one else that they want to go to. And I feel like even this summer we had a babysitter, and if I was home, they wanted me and not her, which is fine. She did a phenomenal job with our strange COVID stuff. They do not feel secure without an adult around. And when you're the only one that you're the home, there's not another home for them in their hearts. There's not another, this is just my person. No matter how much they love grandma and grandpa, there's not the same connection as parent. And they don't get enough ever from me. I'm not enough for them. I've always known I wasn't enough, but living in the not enough for my kids of being a single parent, where I know that their needs are so much greater than what I can give them. I can either spend time with them, or I can have a house that is, you know, we can find clean laundry.
Yeah. Kristen, go ahead. Were you going to say something else?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. No.
I think that whether or not we've experienced what you have, we all either have thought about a situation that we might find ourselves mm-hmm. in where we think, I could never do that. Or listeners may be in a situation where they feel in over their heads, like kind of what you're describing. Mm-hmm. So I would love to know how the Lord has met you in that. When you say, I am it for my kids, and I feel that way every day. Mm-hmm. How has the Lord helped you in this?
He has given us just some phenomenal people. At the church that we're at, we have another lady she's probably in her 40s or 50s. She was widowed as a very young, she had been married for 4 years. She had two young daughters. And she was widowed, and she actually married someone from our church in this little teeny tiny farming town. And I can see her. And it's just a reminder that things can be good again. Hmm. Whether or not I get married again, whether or not things turn out as visibly well, that my life is still worth living and there's still a lot left. We focus a lot on what's gone. My husband's gone, but there are still so many people left. And he's just given us phenomenal people. We have my good friend Kendra actually agreed to live at our house with us during the school year this year. We lost, because of COVID, we lost a lot of our extra help. And she is living in our house, so my kids are all bunking in one room. She and I each have our own rooms, but I've noticed in the last 2 weeks she's been here that even when she is just like working on her work from her job, but present, the kids is emotional, like, oh, there's another adult here. It's not just mommy. It's not just, you know, he has given us people that are emotionally and spiritually stable. He's given us phenomenal church families. The churches that we were at in when Tim was in seminary and then in Fargo and Spearfish have been just phenomenal. They have stepped up. They've cared for us. They've loved us. Even though they can't be here, they remind me that they're thinking of us. Mm. We are blessed to have an army. And I'm not speaking figuratively there. It is an army. And, you know, I've had to call someone to do my snow once. And this is South Dakota. It snows kind of a lot here. And I think my dad mowed once before someone offered to help, and it's just been taken care of. So just things like that are extras, and part of the mental load that I was talking about early have been just taken off our plates. I could have done a snowblower, but I would have had to strap a 2-year-old to my back to do it. Because
I'd love to know, you've mentioned a few things, few specific things, but for those of us who have single parents in our life or a grieving widow, mm-hmm. what are some of the very practical things that people did that have been helpful to you?
Being there, you know, we've had people text me. I have somebody text pretty regularly. I'm going to the store, and it's not even always the same person. I'm going to the store. Is there anything you're out of? Because a grocery order has to be a minimum of $35 to, you know, mm-hmm. and those kinds of things. What are that I'm thinking about you and things that you might need? Whether or not I actually need something, it's good to know. I mean, I wish I had known when I was a pastor's wife how easy it is to bless a single mom, like a text message, something that just reminds me that there's more than this little world that I'm looking in. Eat with them. have a meal with them. Single parents love eating with people that don't like put their feet on the table.
Yeah,
and talk about the bathroom and ask for something and then complain about it or just flat out gaslight you and say, this isn't what I want. Yeah. No, that's not what I said. Just and being yourself, being fun. You know, we need just basic things, having fun. There have been times that a text message or a stop from someone has changed the entire course of my day and my attitude and mood throughout the whole day. And it doesn't take a lot.
That's great.
It doesn't take a lot. Nobody has to like go to cook this 5-star meal for us or anything like that.
I'm wondering, as a single woman now, do you think about dating? Mm-hmm. Has that come up? Would you like to get married again?
I would be, I'm open to it. I don't really have any super like, oh my goodness, nothing exciting to report or anything like that. the rule of big numbers says that it's very likely that I'll get married again. I'm 35 right now. I was widowed at 33. I really, one of the things that I've seen, it's a question that comes up in the groups that we, the widow groups that I'm part of on Facebook, is when do you start dating again? Or is there a right time? Or is there, you know, I think the day after Tim passed away, my oldest asked me, so are you going to get married again? And we moved, and he said, so does this house come with a parent that's a dad? Because he didn't even, like, so naive that he didn't have a word for stepdad. Like, he had no clue.
Yeah.
Like, how do I even ask this question? And I was like, no, it doesn't. I'm sorry. But it comes with being really close to grandpa's house. I am open to it. I don't think that I would close that door, but there are, even with the kids' questions, there are things that I have been very careful about, whether or not, you know, being mindful of whether someone's emotionally reckless when they're around, or whether I'm very careful with that, because our situation does stir a lot of emotion in a lot of people. It's just, it's a hard spot to be in. It's not a very common spot, but I'm open to it. I told the kids that my job is still to be their mom. My job is still to love them and take care of them. I'm not their dad. I'm their mom. And this is what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard, but this is what we're being asked to do. And if God has someone for us, we'll all know, because we make each other's lives better. We make his life better, and he makes our life better. And that's how we'll know. Obviously, there was we were watching Cinderella. And these are just like little bombs that come and go off in our house. And you don't even think about it. I thought, I loved Cinderella when I was a kid. Let's watch it. And the beginning of the movie, this little girl's mom had died and her dad got remarried. And then he died, and the person he was married to turned out to be horrible.
Yeah.
And my kids were just like, what?
I wouldn't have even thought of it.
I didn't think of it. You know, so there are just these little bombs that, you know what, kids, if mommy gets remarried, the time and the place that was written, it was very important, more important than anything else, to marry someone that had as good of status as you, or better than you. Like, you're the amount of money you had, or the title that you had. Those were really, really more important than anything else. And that's not what mommy thinks. That this person will love Jesus and will be kind, and we will make each other's lives better.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all kinds of little things out there that just, oh my goodness, nobody, and I don't even always think of them.
Yeah. Kristen, can you help us step into your shoes as far as the question that I'm asking everybody in their different experiences is, what do you wish that people would ask you about your experience as a single mom, but they may be afraid to ask, or they don't know to ask? And then could you answer that question for us?
I think one of the questions that I do get asked the most, you already asked the will you get married again one. One that I do get asked the most are people wonder, you know, why does this happen, or what would be the person for God to take a pastor and a dad out of the world and out of people's lives, out of your lives? What purpose could he possibly have, or why? And one of the things that I have learned through all this and working towards accepting is that death isn't here because it's something that God wanted. Death is here because it releases us from the sinful state that we put ourselves in, that humanity put ourselves in. When humanity sinned, there were two trees in the garden, and one that God said, don't eat from. And we ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then he cast Adam and Eve out so they wouldn't eat from the tree of life and be left forever in our sinful state. It's not my favorite part. It's not, I mean, saying, and that's the only answer that we can give. that this is what releases us from our sinful state and allows us to be fully healed and fully restored to what God made us to be. Mm-hmm. When we start asking why or saying, well, this person had so many people saved because they died, or at this person's funeral, there was this, we start to put a value on life. Mm. We really like our numbers and our math, mm-hmm. but there is no life that's more important or less important than another. And when we start to look at the whys, well, we feel like this is negative or that's positive, we start to put value on the loss. Is it a big loss or a small loss? Well, why would that only be that, you know, the only why is that death releases us from this sinful, broken place. And if we have followed Jesus Christ, we are restored to the way that God wanted us to be in the beginning.
That's great. Thank you for, that's a good reminder, because I think, yeah, I've heard people ask that question. I've often wondered that question. And so that your response helps us really put things in perspective in a good way. So thank you. And I'd also love your perspective on the church and how we can better love single moms and dads around us.
This was the easiest question for me to answer.
Oh, good.
Yeah. No, and this is kind of part of one of the things, not necessarily a why, but something that I see that God can use for good, is that I have experience as a pastor's wife. I grew up in, people talk about white privilege. I'm going to talk about spiritual privilege. My parents were believers. They are believers. My grandparents were believers. And the kids and I are actually generations 4 and 5 in the church that I grew up in.
Wow.
Yes. And my in-laws family is very similar. They're spread out more over the country, but in coming home, so I grew up in a church family, and we were actually mostly related to each other. When I met Tim, he was eligible partly because he was a bachelor and he was from Washington. So
he's not your family member.
He's not a cousin.
Right.
But I know how to navigate church. I know how to navigate the church culture. And I know to ask for help. And I know that more often than not, people are willing to help and want to help and just don't know what to do. One of the things that I've done is that typically we sit with my parents at church. When they're not there, I say to one of my lifelong friends, you know, hey, my parents are gone. Can we sit with you? So that if I have to take someone out, the other kids have someone to sit with. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so that would be one thing that, you know, specifically the church can do, is whatever we can do to make things easier for the single parent in church and feel welcome. Hey, come sit with our family. We'll help you with the kids during the service. One of my best friends, and even as a pastor's wife sitting by myself the whole time, one of my best friends and I, we just had one adult on each end of the row, all the kids in the middle. And that was how we did our, and just, you know, it doesn't have to be anything grand. There's no, you know, you don't have to buy huge expensive toys or anything like that. That's an example of a question that I know to ask. Someone, especially a single parent that isn't familiar with church or church culture, wouldn't have any idea who would I even ask to do that. Who, you know, who can I leave my kids in the church service with while I take someone to the restroom? Or do I have to pack everybody up and haul them there? Or what am I doing? How does this work? Just some of the logistics. Grab a kid's hand and say, here, your mom's going to the car. Let's go. And, you know, grab a kid's hand and and these are all people have done these things for me. One other thing that's really, really big and I think really important is giving a space for a single parent to minister within the church, and have a viable ministry that is important to the church. I am fortunate enough that I can do things typically because I have my parents around. But if I didn't have my parents around, or they weren't reliable, or, you know, there are so many situations where a single parent doesn't have anyone. I have three kids. I can't help with this or that unless I find a babysitter, unless I pay a babysitter. And it makes us feel, and it's true, I bring more work to the table than I do. And when there's a way that you can see to be able to provide a person with a space to minister, because there may be something they can do that it gives grown-up time. Grown-up time is gold. If you want to help a single parent.
Yeah. What I hear you saying is just small gestures, looking for ways to help and being proactive. And maybe someone's ministry could be ministering to the single mom by keeping her kids so she could do the ministry that she feels called to at the church. So,
We talk about being inclusive in society, and that's, I mean, making ways for single parents to be included. Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, Kristen, thank you for being willing to share your story and telling us about your husband, but also the experience with raising kids as a single mom. I'm thankful for your perspective. I know it's been helpful and challenging to those who have listened, so I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Do you know a single mom or dad in your neighborhood or your church? I hope this conversation with Kristen gives you a nudge to reach out to them today with some form of encouragement, or maybe with an offer to serve them in some way. May we be the church to them as they carry the burden of parenting alone. Friends, join me next week as I speak with Kayla Steckline. Kayla also lost her husband, but in a very different way than Kristen did. In 2018, Kayla's husband, Andrew, died by suicide. At the time, he was a megachurch pastor who was struggling with mental illness. Kayla joins me for a difficult yet vulnerable conversation about suicide. What do we need to understand about mental illness and suicide? What do we need to understand specifically about pastors and mental illness? And what does Kayla most want us to know about what she's walked through? With increasing numbers of people dealing with mental illness and statistics showing increased suicide in our country, I believe this is such an important conversation for the church to have. So join me next week, friends, and until then, keep walking forward by faith.